On the show today, we have Sonoma State University's economic professor and Redwood Credit Union board member Robert Eiler, Dr. Robert Eiler, that is, talking about the economic outlook and the situation from a credit union standpoint. So check it out. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show, and we have a doozy of an episode for you here. We have Dr. Robert Eiler from Sonoma State University, economic professor, and a Redwood Credit Union board member too. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm good. How are you, Mike?
Doing well. Welcome back. When was the last? We talked, 2 months ago? Like right at the start
like
of all of this.
Yeah, 100 years ago. But yeah. But I think it was like 2 months total. Ooh,
and were we like in a state of shock then?
Yeah.
It was crazy. And since then, I mean, we're talking about a kind of an economic outlook here, the situation from a credit union standpoint. But I want to cut to the chase here. What's the economic situation in our country right now? Because where there's been stimulus funds, the payment protection program, unemployment, and we're kind of embarking on this reopening process right now. So what's the current state from your neck of the woods? What do you see out there?
That's a great question. So the current state is a mixed bag of policies that have meant to be positive on the macroeconomy and also the social policy that's a negative that's slowly starting to lift around the country.
Right.
So one of the things that's a little bit tricky is that the spending packages that have come out of Congress and the lower interest rates from the Federal Reserve, which have ultimately affected rates across the board, really don't do their work until our economy starts to get back to work again. We're sort of waiting for the social policy to lift to allow those other policies to synergistically work not only with each other, but with the economy to move us forward. So right now we're going to see some real ugly numbers for April and May across the country as the state. So on Friday, the release of the state data from April and all the county data from April are going to start to show up, and we're going to see some wild unemployment numbers. That's also going to be true for May. The second quarter is going to be extremely ugly in terms of historic context. And so we just have to prepare ourselves for tough numbers. But as we open up, we're going to see activity pick up. And we're already seeing that in certain places. So that's relatively good news in an otherwise a dark data period.
Okay, yeah, because I remember when we last talked, you pretty much you said from the outright, Q2 is going to be ugly. Let's just get that over with. So, but Q3 and Q4, we could see a definite bounce back, right?
Yeah, and forecasters are out there suggesting generally that Q3 and Q4 and even the first quarter of 2021 look pretty good.
Okay.
With the idea that we're going to fall so far down that getting relatively good positive numbers in the subsequent quarters, as long as the economy's back at work, is not that tough to achieve.
Okay.
But at the same time, it's really about how close are we, and this is the key, Mike, how close are we to the original baseline we were and where we thought we were going to be against where we've fallen and how long is it going to take to get there? Because that's really a capacity question. And where economists are really focusing their effort is not, you know, let's measure April's unemployment rate. The key is, what are we losing in the capacity of the economy? Because we lose capacity, let's say like 5 to 7% of our economy goes away because of business losses.
Right.
The ability for the economy to hire back the workers that were there at 100%, 7% of that might be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to baseline might have some trickery in it because we have to then rebuild that capacity that was there in February. It's very, very strange in that sense. We don't know what's been lost yet, and we'll find that out over the next few quarters.
Yeah, that's what I'm glad you brought that up. And my next question, and I've been thinking about this a lot, seeing all the numbers and all the studies and stats and things like that. America seems to be number one for all the wrong reasons during this COVID time. I'm just saying it, you know, and it's not the number ones that you want. Obviously, with COVID cases, unemployment, debt, the economy. What's your take on this ranking? What are we doing wrong? I mean, I know this is a really big question, but it just bothers me.
Let me try to break it down in a couple of ways.
Sure.
So, you know, you might look at other countries and say, you know, what's the secret sauce in New Zealand?
Yeah.
Well, the secret sauce is they're an island country, right? So they have a lot. They can shut everything down from, let's say, an international travel standpoint a little bit easier than we can because we have very long contiguous borders with both our northern and southern neighbors.
Yeah.
So the flow of people is a little trickier. But New Zealand and we and the United States share, at least from a political standpoint, we both countries have relative freedoms otherwise. So one of the trickiest parts about the United States is trying to lock down 350 million people in a way that's somewhat counterintuitive to our normal, not only sort of free aspects politically, but also, you know, if I vote to walk out of my front door and take off, hey, I'm voting with my feet, and who's going to really stop me?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, we've seen other models sort of work on more of a full lockdown. Sweden kind of has the other way of playing it, where they've kind of gone in this sort of laissez-faire way and said it's just kind of working itself out. Well, in the United States, that nobody wanted to roll the dice at that level, and hence politically they were very concerned about the other side of the ball, that if we saw death spike. I mean, and so we're one, number one, like you said, in some negative ways too, but it's really a function of our inability to kind of cleave off all the international connections on the front end and take such draconian measures that we're going to just stuff everything down first. But I think we're going to learn a lot of lessons from this, in that if we have a second round, we probably will go into a more full, complete lockdown for a few weeks under the supposition that we will be able to get around it more quickly.
Yeah.
And we'll also be able to take some measures, and this is really the key, Mike.
Okay.
From a business standpoint, we want to take measures between now and a potential reinfection time, assuming that we don't have an immediate reinfection. But if we get a break, if we take the right measures, we may be able to mitigate the effects of a second round, because we've taken those measures in our businesses to where politically we're not worried about locking the entire economy down to keep transmissions muted.
Right.
That's the game now, between now and, let's say, November, December, when we're getting a lot of data from science, we're likely to be number one in reinfection rates.
Yeah, there's just so many things we're learning right now. There's so many unknowns that we're learning right now that will help us, like you said, in the future for sure, just in case a second round comes around. So let's connect the dots to credit unions. How are they doing right now? What are you seeing out there right now with the current state of credit unions?
That's a great question. So, you know, there's sort of three meta level issues I see in credit unions. One is net interest margins being squeezed. So with lower interest rates and that squeeze on the income side, credit unions being challenged just from the top line core business environment.
Mm-hmm.
The second is that they've had to ratchet up their allowance for loan losses because they're concerned of going into a recession, especially since the last few recessions, and most recessions have this, you're going to have some foreclosures, bankruptcies, delinquencies rising, and you have to plan for that now so you don't get hammered by it later, right? So that's also a drag on profitability. And the third is more on the human side. You know, credit unions are really kind of a helping industry. And so a lot of credit unions are thinking about, well, our members and employees and our communities, what are we going to do for them that we can? Because maybe we can use the last 5 or 6 years of good activity to now provide a little bit more member give back, and also think about how our employees are going to be stressed, because our employees are also generally our members and certainly our community members. What can we do to really shift what we can on the profitability side to support those communities through this short time? But credit unions, like banks otherwise, are going to feel some profitability squeeze on the front end. The hope is that we don't have another housing problem like we had 2007, 2008, 2009 that really stresses our portfolios as credit unions. That's the one thing right now we've got to try to avoid deeply. And we will see how the next couple of quarters go in terms of national housing markets and how that might stress balance sheets.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm really glad you said that, because I just interviewed the VP of mortgage lending from Elevations Credit Union, and their mortgage lending they're doing really well in the housing sector. And that was the basis of the interview. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because it seems like that's okay right now, as opposed to a lot of other things, right?
So yeah, but here's the conundrum, right? So let's say that we have people that want to buy homes and rates are relatively low.
Yeah.
Then you have people who want to refinance, and that takes their rate down from something higher to lower. So both of those are a squeeze on the revenue generated from the core center of profitability for credit unions, the ways in which we build net worth, we kind of sustain our ROA. If those things get squeezed, it puts more pressure on what you'd call non-interest income, the things that, you know, sort of add frosting to the main cake, if you will. and this is where that sort of friction between how do we help our members, right? I want people to pay a lower interest rate. It's better for their financial lives. The problem is, it's not necessarily better for the credit union's health.
Yeah.
So that game, at what point do I kind of reshape the way I refinance or allow refinancing to happen? How do I look at the mortgage market and try to figure out what's that mean for my overall, let's say you average yield on assets?
Yeah.
But you want to help the members, and that's the game, is that you've got to find that balance at point. In a lot of credit unions who didn't come into this, let's say, with super strong balance sheets might find more trickiness in delivering that to members than ones that had relatively strong financials coming in.
Yeah. That leads me to my next question, is like, what advice do you have for credit unions as we begin this long process of reopening? Because there's a bunch of credit unions right now that are reopening their branches, and obviously the headquarters are open and stuff. So what's the step-by-step process here as we gradually reopen?
Well, I think two major principles. One is, you've got to try ways of being more efficient, because if there's another piece of this, I didn't really say this before, I talked a lot about, you know, sort of, let's say, asset loss or squeezes in revenue. You can also look in on the expense side. Are there ways to get more efficient short of actually letting people go? And if there are, you really want to investigate doing that, because that's where you can gain a little bit of room to provide both members and employees with a little bit more support.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to expect also, and this is where that other friction takes place, you might seek those efficiencies out, but like other employers, the branches are going to have to go through some increase in cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how members are going to want to come into the credit union. There's going to be some, at least on the margin, some reticence to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change the way that people interact with the credit union?
Yeah.
And if it does, there could be some efficiencies in the medium and long term that help credit unions financially, but that's a big shift for boards, staff, administration to think about. What happens if we have a quarter of the traffic over the next 18 months in the branches because nobody wants to come in?
Right.
What do we do with that real estate that we maybe made some recent investments in
mm-hmm.
to try to help members? Now they're saying, forget it. I've actually totally adopted mobile. I was very reticent to do it. Now I got to do it because I don't want to get an infection, especially for our members that are older.
Yep.
So a lot of those are going to get played out. So it's going to be somewhat of a challenge to reopen the branches and assume we're going to have the same foot flow, the same way of helping members. And credit unions on the technological edge are probably going to be one step ahead of the other ones in the sense they're going to maybe have already seen this coming. And it'll be intriguing to watch what models come out that seem to be more efficient and help
mm-hmm.
members without them having to physically come in, especially if there's reinfection in the fall and the winter.
Yeah, no doubt. This is like juggling chainsaws and bowling balls. My gosh, it's just
It is a little bit. I mean, it's really tough to know which one you're going to catch, and it's still going to be hurtful when you catch it, right? So it's going to be credit unions are not immune to the problem generally of an employer or generally of a depository institution otherwise. You're going to feel some of that pain. That's why I said earlier that the ones that are going to be probably in the best shape are the ones that financially entered this in pretty strong shape.
Yeah.
But it's not to say that there's not ones that were maybe a little less in good shape that can't make a strong transition thinking about how do you watch your balance sheet and how do you try to look at efficiency as a way of kind of getting through this time and be a stronger credit union
mm-hmm.
on the other side.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of excited to see the transformation over the next like 6 months or so to see what, like you said, what does stick, what will work, and that kind of new models, new ways of thinking, new ways of interacting with members and stuff. So I'm really, and having said that, are there any specific dates that we need to be aware of as we go on this path to recovery, a successful recovery, that is? Are there milestones to look for down the road here?
I think there are, and I'll give you two. Well, I'll give you three, and they're kind of somewhat related. So one is October 1, in which we'll have seen most of the tourism season happen in the United States. So we'll see if people reallocate their time to more direct domestic travel rather than, let's say, flight-driven national travel and or international travel once we start to open up. So October 1 is going to tell a lot of the tale about that part of our economy and how far it's gone. It's also going to tell a lot about what's happened with businesses making adjustments. The second one is our national election. So election day in November is going to tell a lot of the tale about the policy movement going forward. If the current White House administration remains in the White House, that'll kind of give us that piece of it. If Joe Biden is elected, does that change the way the economy and politics are going to work in the United States
mm-hmm.
to maybe change the path we are going to walk out of this problem and into? And then the third will be, by January 1, have we seen a reinfection? Is there a threat of it internationally?
Yeah.
How has that changed the uncertainty in our lives once again, vis-a-vis the potential of a vaccine?
Yeah.
I think that those are the three big dates coming up for members and employees in our communities in such a way to try to figure out, what uncertainty can I now alleviate in my life going forward that allows me to make the right decision as a business owner or as mm-hmm. just a worker?
Yeah, so many things to consider. In just the next 4 or 5 months, my gosh, it's just...
Yeah, no, it's crazy the speed at which all this is happening.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Robert, I'm going to let you get back to work because I know you got a lot of stuff on your plate, so I appreciate your time as always. Anything else to wrap up? Any final words of wisdom here?
No, I think that's it. I think, the only thing I would say is for credit unions, it's going to be a very trying time. And just like any other employer, you look for models that seem to be working that can provide efficiencies, because the revenue side, I think, is going to unfortunately be squeezed for a little while.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. All right, sir. Well, I'll let you get back to work. Appreciate the time as always. And let's check back in again in about a couple of months and see where we are. Be interesting to see how this stuff pans out.
Anytime, Mike. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Robert. Well done.